This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ked Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, or as Luthen would say it, Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Lambda.
Lander.
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 That's it.
Lander.
We are here to talk about Star Wars news. We're not here to talk about Andor. Oh, we have a lot of thoughts about Andor. We're going to talk about our experiences. Joseph and I were not at the premiere, but we did get screeners. Jennifer was at the premiere, but didn't get to watch it, but did watch it later on. And we have our reviews and stuff coming later this week when the episodes are released to the public. We'll be clear about that. No Andor spoilers, but it's on our mind, especially Stellan Skarsgård's voice. So apologize if at any point today we all go Andor or Audible, because today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's right. Center recommends, if I remember, or Joseph reminds me, well, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Hi, everybody. Oh, this is a great mood. It's a Monday morning. I've got electrodes strapped to my back, so I feel alive. We got a lot to talk about, but Star Wars adventures, premieres, red carpets, smokehouse dinners, a lot went down the last week. Joseph, how are you doing?
Really good. I think you should explain electrodes first, though. I think you should go first if you're willing to share about your electrodes.
Yeah, I have a longstanding back injury I need to go take care of. I always put off because I'm a dumb, toxic male. But I hurt my back in the gym on Saturday. So it hurts to stand, but at least I make up for it by not being able to sit. And sleeping kills me. So I have one of those. My friend Eric Bass from the band Shinedown, when we worked with him at GPA, he heard me complain one day. He goes, "I got something for you." He went in his backpack and gave me this device. It's like a electrotherapy. You can get them at mall kiosks. You just strap these gooey pads to your back, and now I'm just shooting electrodes into my spine. Who knows if it's good? I feel good.
Nice. That's great. I mean, that's some Star Wars stuff, right? That's as close as we're getting to a Bacta tank, is little mini Palpatine shocks in your back.
Yeah. I feel a little bit like Lobot. Yeah, no, absolutely. So, this happens every now and then. You know, you got to learn your lessons, kids. Be careful bending over and doing weights. All right. Just be careful. Protect your back. Protect your back. One false move in your heart, which is important till now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the start of my adventures. Spent some other adventures talking about Star Wars, thinking about Star Wars. We, on Wednesday night, we being Joseph and I, got to hang out with Alex and Molly Damon and Alden Diaz of Octet Radio. They were in town for the Andor launch event at the El Capitan. We're there the night before hanging out. We went to the smokehouse. It was great. Oh, man. Joseph and I were like proud uncles introducing the smokehouse to three smokehouse rookies. It was a great time, Joseph, wasn't it?
Yeah, they have this great, cheese bread, cheese toast that they claim is the world's greatest. And it's one of the few times I've seen the world's greatest. Like, I agree. So it's always fun to watch people's first bite and see if they're like, nah, or yeah. And they were, yeah, it was a great night. It's a great restaurant and all great friends and great to talk about Lady Gaga, Star Wars, utterly random things. It was a really, really fun night.
Really fun indeed, and got us in that Andor mood. I mean, I'm burst at the seams, ready to review, deep dive, discuss, but of course we're going to hold off. But yeah, that's been part of my Star Wars weekend as well. Can't deny that as well. But a lot of fun doing that and catching up on the comics. And I always, when I finally get to my stack, I always want to kind of provide little updates. I still struggle with some of the storylines. I'm not a huge fan of the Bounty Hunters line. No disrespect to anyone involved in that one. Just not connecting with me, which is fine. Aphra is always one of my favorite characters that sometimes I still think the stories are so wild, but it's part of the fun. I want to shout out the Han Solo, the Han and Chewie, I think it's a 5-issue run. I think it's an issue 3 now, whatever. I'm really enjoying that one. That one's working for me. Again, it's all about a personal perspective and what you connect with. So I just want to shout that out. That's been a lot of fun. Kind of seeing Han, Chewie, and some important characters in Han's life show up during this time. So it's fun to just sit down on a couch and flip through the old comical booklets, as Mr. Burns would say. Enjoy some Star Wars.
That's great. Yeah, no, Smokehouse was a wonderful life in Star Wars adventure. Watching the screener of Andor, we will talk about in more detail. But when I was kind of coming up with what were my Star Wars adventures, I was like, I feel like I'm missing something huge. Oh, yeah, that new and exciting Star Wars show. That was a really special experience. But we will talk about it in detail when we review those first three episodes, once the whole world has had the opportunity to watch them. Another big thing that's been going on, mentioned a couple times on the podcast, my wife and I are kind of cleaning, reorganizing, reimagining our apartment. A part of it is that we got all of our belongings here in Los Angeles. A bunch of them are in a storage space close by. But we had a little bit of that when we first moved here of like, who knows, we'll probably move a lot. So we'll just kind of put things somewhere for now. And that was 8 years ago. And then my action figure obsession grew. And the pandemic happened. And, you know, it's one of those things that reminds me of the great lessons of Star Wars can be found in really mundane, everyday things. Mm. I realized that I was kind of afraid of cleaning, partially from that, oh, man, that pile has got a bunch of stuff that I don't know where it goes or how to deal with. It's kind of stressful. There's some like piles of paper. Like, I'm pretty sure I lost that important thing and I don't want to find out. Like, And then just like the fear of change of just like that pile in that corner has been that way for 5 years. I want it to be gone, but also change. And it's just felt really good. I think just various things in life have happened where I really want to be in a place of pushing past fear, letting go, evolving. And it's been really fun to physically do that in the space. In a big thing that's happening with that is action figures. Instead of like piling up and up and up and up and me going, this is untenable. How is this going to end? saying, creating new storage systems and new display systems. So like now a lot of the action figures are like up on a shelf, like I'm an adult instead of just an action figure Jawa, just collecting them all. So last night I set up my Obi-Wan Kenobi shelf, and then I set up a Women of the Galaxy action figure shelf. And right now it's Reva, Leia, Fennec Shand, and Ahsoka. And I've got it all set up so I can easily rotate. So I'm very, very excited about the Star Wars adventure I've gone on, both from the like deeper bringing the lessons of Star Wars into your day to day life. And also like I can look at my action figures more.
I feel you. I feel you. Those 5 year piles just taunting you in the corner.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's my big life in Star Wars adventure.
That's beautiful. That's wonderful. Jen, one of the reasons you couldn't join us at the Smokehouse is you were prepping for a very awesome job, red carpet experience, a lot going on. Take us through your Star Wars adventures.
It was very exciting. I got to go to the red carpet premiere of Andor. I was, well, the video will be out, I think, probably the day after this episode airs. So I will share with Disney Plus on their YouTube channel. And I didn't really know what to expect. It's been a long time since I've been to a red carpet and working. And so I'm on the red carpet and you're seeing the talent go by. And it was kind of earlier. And I started seeing some like influencers and some actors. And then I saw this couple walk by and I'm like, oh, they're so cool. They must be like influencers or maybe they're even like actors who are acting on a Disney show. And then I looked again and I went, that's Molly and Alex. I kid you not. I was like, should we interview them? Like, are we going to have to pull them? And then I realized it was them. And as I was realizing that, and then something happened and I looked and they were gone. So I didn't even get to say hi to them, but it was a really funny moment. You know, you have those moments where you're like, wait, I know that person. that was cool, but it was a fantastic event. There was so much excitement. There were a lot of fans there, people that were cosplaying. I saw a ton of Jyn Erso's. There were some troopers. It was just B2 Emo was there hanging out. It was really, really exciting. I won't share who I interviewed. You'll have to watch the video to find out. That's all I'll say. Yeah, the video will be out, I think, Wednesday the 21st, I believe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, me too.
I saw the Instagram photos. You know, Molly's always wonderful, fashionable. She's Dark Rey incarnate. We know this. But Alex, he had it turned up to 11. That Lando shirt, the tinted shades.
Yes.
He reached a new level of superstardom right there.
He really did. Yes. They were like, had this like this vibe about them as they're walking the red carpet. And I love it. Cause I mean, it's intimidating. You know, you have all these press people and all these cameras and all that. And they were just, you know, having a great time. I love it.
That's great. You got to, you know, I'm not good at that, but someone asked me at this last celebration, like, I'm starting to get recognized at my podcast. How do you deal with that? You know, and I said, you just act like everyone's always watching you. Just when you're waiting in line for a hot dog or going to get a snack, just pretend everyone's staring at you. Alex and Molly seemed to have that down. They looked great. It was a lot of fun to see them do that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Just a lot of great swagger and fun from them. That Mothma inspired dress that Molly had, man, that was amazing.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Well, Jen, I know you can't share much and we all can't share much from what we've watched yet. At least we don't want to. We should say we do hold to number one, hold to embargoes, but two, also the embargo is up. We could give some content, but we just want to make sure everyone has a chance to take it in. But you had a great time. It's always fun to see you working and a good person getting good opportunities. Always makes us happy.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to dive into some Star Wars news. And I did this thing. I sat down. I always like Sunday morning coffee, you know, sweatpants still on. Let me get the Star Wars news. I was like, man, not a lot this week. Not a lot this week. A lot of it Andor. And then I was about to email both of you and go, I just don't know if there's any stories, when I realized, oh, I forgot this big one. Rogue Squadron is officially, put in parentheses, pulled from the Disney release schedule. Reading from Variety, trying to go to trusted trades on this one here. It was revealed this week that Rogue Squadron, and this is not a scoop, this is straight up news. It was revealed this week that Rogue Squadron, the Star Wars film from Patty Jenkins with Matthew Robinson writing, has been pulled from the previously announced release date of December 22nd, 2023. There was no word other than that. No new release date. No word that the movie has been shelved. No confirmation that the movie is still happening. It's just removed from the schedule. So this leaves a wide open space for irresponsible speculation. A lot of it out there. Understandably, it is big news. It a Star Wars movie being moved or pulled. And this is kind of the second time with Rogue Squadron, though that might have had a lot more to do with COVID and the pandemic and all that kind of stuff here. But This is big. No denying that. So we're going to start just simply, what is our reaction to the facts that it's been removed from the schedule, Jennifer?
I was very disappointed. And actually, at first, I thought, no, this can't be. Sorry, I'm in the trash compactor again. because I love Patty Jenkins as a director, and I loved her connection to the story that she shared in that teaser way back when. I mean, that was a big deal to put that out and have her talk about it and announce it. So I was very surprised. I was very disappointed. And there was no other fanfare other than it was just quietly removed, right? So that also to me is very telling. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, guys. I'm so loud. The Dinoga is coming. I can feel it.
All good. Oh, good. Yeah, disappointment, I think, is a fair word. And I'm with you, Jen. I connect. Sometimes I think we're so removed from that long ago Investors Day with that great video package from Patty Jenkins that got me emotional. I think sometimes we're so removed from that where this just becomes this, not a piece of content, like I think that's what a movie is, but just like I've been removed from the emotions where I look at this news story almost like intellectually, like, oh, it'll make sense and it is that. And I don't want to move too far from how I felt and how I do want to see this movie, or do want to see what she comes up with. So, Joseph, your reaction to the facts, just the facts, man.
Yeah, no, I think I just had a different emotional reaction because I have already processed the disappointment. I think that, you know, there's been a couple things for me of like, in my own mind, I was feeling like if they don't announce the beginning of filming or even some casting, if they don't announce anything at D23, the window is really closing for a film to hit that release date in December of next year. You know, I think the Variety article says it pretty well. It's this quote of the announcement is more or less pro forma, as the window for Rogue Squadron to start filming in time to complete the movie by next December has very nearly closed. I think that's a very, very generous assessment from Variety myself. I have some more thoughts about the actual film, its future, excitement for it, disappointment that it's not coming out, you know, yet, confusion about whether it will, all that stuff. But I think in terms of this actual just reaction to the facts that you're asking, Ken, I was strangely happy to have the clarification, right? If that date has been pulled, it's not, oh, Rogue Squadron isn't coming out. It's no Star Wars movie is coming out in December 2023. So most likely no Star Wars movie coming out until at least 2024, which, you know, while I have complex feelings about that, it does just kind of, it's instructive about, I feel like I have my marching orders as a fan of like, don't be too concerned about the movies. They're not going to be here for a little while. Focus all your time and energy on the shows. And when you think about the window of until when the next movie is, we got Andor coming out right now. We got a new season of Mandalorian. We got a new season of Bad Batch. We have Acolyte. We have Ahsoka. We have Skeleton Crew. You know, we have Tales of the Jedi. We actually do, in the span of, you know, the next 2.5 years, have a lot to focus on. And I think I'd like the space to accept that's not going to be a movie. That's going to be Disney+.
Yep.
No, actually, really well said on that. I think there's something to be said about give it to me, Doc. What's the bad news, Doc? All right. All right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And even coming out of D23, I think you made that excellent point, Joseph, of no news was news at D23 for this kind of stuff. And I like the way you're looking at it. And Jen, it's not just about, Joseph's bringing up some great points about the show. It's not just simply a distraction. It's just kind of where the ball is right now. Mm-hmm. And yes, we want to get back to the theater, but yeah, we'll be distracted, I think, till 2024.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's so much. I mean, it's not like we have books, we have animated series, we have live action, and there's just a lot of hashtag content coming down that we can consume.
Your page, yeah.
Right, exactly.
TikTok, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you feel, Ken? What was your just like gut punch emotional reaction? Did you feel like, there it is, it's confirmed, I can focus on other things? Or was it a bummer to be... have it confirmed that there is no Star Wars movie next year?
Yeah, three fronts of the war, the news wars. A little bit of a yeah, duh, type of like, uh-huh. No surprises there. I never thought there was a secret movie being filmed so cool. And kind of that's more the aggressive version of your thank you for the information, Doc. It was like, yeah. Going back to disappointment, I'm enjoying what we're getting. I do believe Star Wars belongs in theaters as well, in addition to what we're getting. So I was, I'm excited. I'm excited for this. There's just such great hype around the films. And going back to what we're talking about, the Patty Jenkins pitch for it, that video, I have not seen Top Gun Maverick or the original Top Gun, as a lot of people know, open mouth kissing. Mom wouldn't let me, still haven't seen it. I gotta follow the rules here. I wanted to see a little bit of a Star Wars version of that. Alex Damon made a great video comparing Maverick to the Star Wars stuff. And so I was excited about it. So there's a little disappointment. But I always have to admit, I think we touch on this stuff a lot with Force Center. Just sometimes, and I think a lot of our listeners share this. I just want to be honest with it. Sometimes you get this news, you go, yeah, okay, cool. All right, 2024. And then you just kind of brace for impact on the discourse around it. Right. And I think at a little bit of here come the articles, right? Here come the red eyes on Kathleen Kennedy. Here comes all this stuff where just like that, I almost want to just be like, get a movie out so we can shut up about that. But really, I want them to get it right. I want them to do what's right. And I think this is on that path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
But that does open, like I said, this up to a lot of speculation. So we can, speculate as to why and maybe when this movie will show up or the other movies there. Jen, you have any thoughts, hopes, scandalous scoops you want to share?
No scoops, just speculating responsibly. And I think it could still happen with another director down the road. I think only because I have a feeling it could be related to creative differences, which, that sounds silly, but it's true. I really do think that it's working within Star Wars, the Star Wars framework, it requires a lot of collaboration, consideration of canon, lore. It's different. And if you're not open to that process, I can see why there might be tension. We're just like, I don't have the time to dedicate to this. Like, remember what Kathleen Kennedy was saying a while back, where she's like, I need a filmmaker to commit 3 years or whatever to this. And that's a big ask, especially for an in-demand director like Patty Jenkins. So I think that people want this story. I think that we're going to get the story. I think if it's going to be theatrically released, it's going to be 2025. Because the 2024 slate is really, really packed with Disney stuff. I mean, they have, what is it, Snow White, The Lion King, or Inside Out. I couldn't even keep track. There were so many. But never say never, right? I just think that it's going to be a while before we get a Star Wars movie in the theaters. Solely.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're going to be waiting for tickets outside Grauman's for a long time. And not drawn on anything concrete, but, this kind of just scheduling is always a good reason. And it's a weirdly honest thing in this town, this mm-hmm. town, you know, this town we're in. You know, this happens in a lot of directors, especially when you're hot, when you're coming off a big movie and this is your time to strike, you're going to get a lot more opportunities. I think Patty Jenkins hit that. And sometimes, you might take on some things. You might have to come to those tough realizations of, I just can't get to this right now, or this isn't working. And there's the creative differences side, which we're not saying there's anything actually out there that would point to this, but I wonder about that too. This is just a straight up wonder of, you know, it's one thing you can be different. Star Wars goes a lot of different directions, but the core things you have to have to is a strong word, but you have to keep in line with that stuff. To me, that's maybe it's just a personal opinion, Joseph. You have to keep in line, not just to George's words, but what the mission statement of Star Wars is. And who knows, a bunch of fly persons in space that you could be pushed off the center of Star Wars possibly if you don't approach it right.
Yeah, there might be open mouth kissing. We can't have that.
Can't have that. My mom and not.
That is a joke, everybody. That's a joke. Yeah,
mom.
A joke that deeply affected your life. Think of the different path, the sliding doors. If you had seen open mouth kissing and Top Gun at a young age, your life might have been different, Ken.
Well, what was funny is I think there's open mouth kissing in Yentl, and we watched that movie 30 times. Oh. VHS. My mom's a big Streisand fan, so, you know, Papa, can you hear me? I heard that song a lot.
Yeah. Oh, that's very funny. It's very funny. Getting back to Star Wars, which I almost don't want to. I really agree with both of you. I was paraphrasing in my mind that big Vanity Fair article that came out this May that is a big article, but then it had the little sub articles. And there was one that was a Q&A directly with Kathleen Kennedy. And I think some of the back and forth about what exactly is being said about the movie Solo and about recasting really drew so much focus that I don't know if people paid as much attention to this quote. So I just wanted to read it real quick. Anthony Bresnikan is asking about what are the plans for Star Wars movies. And Kathleen Kennedy responds, "We have a roadmap. I would say that Taika's story fits more specifically into that. Rogue Squadron, we kind of pushed off to the side for the moment. Patty is developing the script further. Then we will talk about how that connects to the central spine that we're working on. There's a couple of filmmakers that we've been in conversation with over quite a long period of time that I'm hoping will come in and make the overall commitment that John and Dave have made. That's ideally what I would love to see happen in the feature space." So I think that really supports what both of you are saying. One, I think there's this plan to say, okay, we're not necessarily announcing a trilogy, but we do want to have an idea of how these movies connect, how they could connect, you know, what that central spine might be, if it's thematic, if it's following a different group of people over time, if it's set in a specific era, if it's set in a specific geographic region of the galaxy, whatever it is, right? That there is a desire to have, like, we're not just going to say, here's one movie, here's another movie. We're going to create the possibility that they could kind of grow together, right?
Wow, that makes sense. Like Marvel.
Yep, like Marvel, to be like, hey, we put this one out and it kind of involves the, maybe one character appears, but it, if that movie doesn't sing, then we don't have to do three more. But if it does, we can, which makes a lot of sense to me. So I think in this quote, her just directly saying, we've already put that off to the side for a moment. I feel like for a long time, for me, the question wasn't, is Rogue Squadron going to come out in 2023? It was, is Taika Waititi's movie going to come out in 2023? Yeah. And now the answer to both of those things seem to be no. And then for like the speculation about why, I mean, I don't think there's creative differences can get thrown around as a cover story. It can get thrown around as a critique of the process. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think that Patty Jenkins has worked a very long, hard time in this industry, had great success a couple of times, but in particular enjoyed a lot of freedom, as I understand it, on Wonder Woman 1984.
Yes.
So then coming into a process like Star Wars, where you have what Kathleen Kennedy also talked about in this interview of, we have sort of thematic guardrails about this is what Star Wars means. This is what we want to convey. These are kind of the suite of, important ideas within those guardrails. You know, please be as creative and as personal as possible. And some creators are like, great, I can do that. I want to do that. And other creators are like, no, I don't want guardrails of any kind. That by itself is a challenge. But maybe even the film could have gotten to a place where everybody's starting to feel pretty good about it. But then this central spine idea comes up, right? And maybe Patty Jenkins isn't interested in making sure that Rogue Squadron kind of has an interlocking piece with whatever Taika Waititi's doing, right? It is a lot, and I don't see it as a criticism of either side to have them try and go, right, we don't want to do this kind of collaboration. Thanks. We tried. It didn't work out for us. Okay. Because I just, there are lots of different ways to be creative, and I love creators like Favreau who can be really creative, or Tony Gilroy who can be really creative and express themselves within the framework. And then I love people like David Lynch who would never touch Star Wars or Marvel because he is going to do what he is going to do, period. I don't think either is wrong personally. It's just different creators.
Right.
No, I think it's a great way to focus on that creative differences phrase. Yeah, you're right. It is, I think every creative project probably has differences, right? It's always amazing. Any film or TV show gets made. And I think that's a good thing, but also, I wouldn't want that spun into a negative on Patty Jenkins because we don't know the details. It could be going well, but that's a great quote you pulled going back from the Brez there. You get a podcast research gold star on that one. Because I think the answer was, the answer, my friend, was blown in the wind. It was right there. That was right there. And we've gone on this discussion, the creative guardrails thing. I've seen just misinterpreted so many times out there by folks. It's just Star Wars has a point of view is the way I look at it. Star Wars has a point of view. And if you look at Darth Vader in a hallway and go badass and you stop there, and I'm not saying Patty Jenkins does, I'm not saying Colin Trevorrow does or anyone else, but if you stop there, as we see a lot of fans do, quite frankly, that's not the point of view Star Wars has. And if you're putting that into your story or you're approaching it in a different way, I don't know. There's a lot of ways that you could take it and it be wrong for Star Wars, but right for you. I don't know. Jen, how many times have you fought with the studio heads?
You know, it's really interesting because we are in a very weird state in the entertainment industry. I think people forget sometimes we just came off of a pandemic. Like a lot of things were not getting made. A lot of things were bombing at the box office because nobody was going to the movie theaters, right? And I go back to what Bob Chapek said, which was, you know, Encanto only became a hit. It did not do that well in the theaters. It became a hit when it started streaming on Disney Plus. But we have to ask ourselves a question. If it had never been in theaters and only was released on Disney Plus, would it have been as big of a hit? And that's what I don't know, because I know I wanted to see Encanto. They had the huge marketing for the theatrical release, and I was bummed that we it was during the pandemic, we were not going to go to the movie theaters with my kids. So I was, and a lot of people were anxiously awaiting it to hit Disney Plus. And so when it did, and then you get word of mouth and all that stuff, and everyone's at home, everyone's going to watch it. Well, now things are starting to pick back up. People are starting to go to the movies again. And people are now studio heads are trying to figure out, well, what is going to make sense to make a movie? Like the whole framework that Marvel has done has really worked well, very connected. If you've, you know, it makes it so that you can release two movies a year because it's all kind of like a cohesive story. And I think Star Wars is going to try and do something similar because that if they're going to, you know, target the theatrical releases, that makes sense. People are going to want to go to the movie theaters. But I think we may actually get a Star Wars movie on Disney Plus solely. I think we could get that in 2024. Not 2023, but certainly 2024. And that will be very interesting because Star Wars has had huge success on Disney Plus. So why not, right? It can buy a little bit of time while they're working on the overall framework for the movie theater stuff. This is a different type of story. So I don't know. I'm everything is up in the air and I'm just so fascinated because this is like everything is constantly changing and evolving, and movies as we've known it are now totally different. What's going to happen? How is streaming going to change our, entertainment industry? It's fascinating.
even some of the conversations around box office and everything just seem antiquated at this
right.
point. Like it's just we're in new territory. And I always have a friend who years ago reminded me, we're working in digital media. He's like, we are like 5 to 10 years into this. Television has like 70 years of how this goes on. We're figuring this out.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. My final wrap-up question was going to be kind of where are we now with the state of Star Wars movies? I think we've all kind of touched upon it there. But carrying off what you said, Jen, and I'll pitch this to you, Joseph, here. First is this idea of a Disney Plus Star Wars movie. And then you hear, I think it was Pedro Pascal on the red carpet last week. I saw some quote of, Rick Famuyiwa wants to do a Mandalorian movie. Like, I think we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I thought, ooh, the big screen, but would you need to do that? Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. It'd be great to see it on the big screen, but that'd be a great transition to a Disney Plus movie, unless I'm off base, Joseph.
No, I think that might be a way to go, a really, really good way to go, because I think I so agree with Jennifer. The industry is in chaos, certainly with streaming. Then the window between something being exclusive in the theaters to being on streaming, from my perception, like I still go to the MCU movies in the theater because they're like an event and I often go with specific friends and I like seeing them on the big screen. But then I have other friends who are just like, yeah, no, I'll wait 2-3 months or whatever. It's not that long. And then I'll be on streaming. So there's that calculus going on too. And then I think the industry has gotten to the point with movies where, you know, a Star Wars movie needs to make so much money to be considered a success. And now I feel like in order for people to feel like, well, it's worth being on the big screen, it has to be huge, right? In scope, probably huge in cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Kathleen Kennedy's quote too. I think that was also in Vanity Fair of like, looking back, this used to be a little bit more, I'm paraphrasing now, I didn't look this quote up, looking back on her like early days with Lucas and Spielberg of like, we used to kind of just experiment and take bigger risks and it didn't used to be this stressful from a sort of business financial, like, and I can see that, like, that's why they can't just declare a trilogy, right? Because if the first one, only makes a couple $100 million, it is risking being considered a failure. So I think there's this confusion, honestly, even in audiences of what do we want in a theater setting? Mm-hmm. What do we think is worth going to the theater? What do we think is the appropriate kind of story to see in a theater? So honestly, almost going back to this, I can't believe I'm getting to see Star Trek on the big screen. I can't believe I'm getting to see X-Files on the big screen, right? You know, that used to be a genre. Oh, Firefly got canceled, but we're going to finish it in a movie. Yeah. Even the Community joke, 6 seasons in a movie. Right. That idea that you could love something at home and then it could explode onto the big screen as a sort of natural evolution. Yeah. It'd be fascinating to go back to that. And I think seeing Mando and Grogu up on the big screen in a, massive adventure has some real appeal.
Yeah, it really does. Especially, I don't want to say if it's the end of the show or the end of the series, but if it would all roads lead to that. But, or you could do, the Simpsons movie, which I was tremendously excited for, which was like not even halfway through the run of the show. It did not end anything. A lot of ways to approach it. Jen, your thoughts on some of that stuff there, carrying on from your great point about the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting because also people would take more risks because they would get their money back in like DVD sales or way back when VHS. Now that's been taken away. So people are even more afraid to lose a lot of money because they know that's it. That's it. It's going to hit the streaming and, streaming, you don't make a lot of money from streaming, at least from the creators' standpoints. It's interesting. I think of like Sex and City. They did a movie. Downton Abbey did a movie. I don't know if they did okay, right? But I do think that there could be something special about The Mandalorian because it is so cinematic. It would be great to see those characters and those landscapes on a big screen. So I think that that's a great idea. And if not, it's going to be on Disney Plus. It's just going to happen there. But maybe they'll have special screenings of it because I think it would be so beautiful to see that story on the big screen. It would feel like a real event.
Yeah.
And I do miss that. I miss that about Star Wars. Mm. Just about my life. I haven't been to the movie theater in I don't know how long. Because for us, you know, it's like, oh, I gotta find a babysitter. And then, yeah, it's like, oh, I can't. What time are we going to go? After the kids go to sleep? Well, then I'm going to fall asleep. Like, oh, I'm so old. So much more to consider.
Yeah, right. So you need a movie that's like, cannot be missed, right?
Absolutely. Because I wanted to go see Nope. That was a must-see for me. And then it just became the logistics were too difficult and we couldn't find a showtime that worked. We had a small window and then it was just like, well, we could either go to dinner or we could go see this movie and rush there. And we're like, well, we never get to enjoy a nice dinner together. We're just going to do that. And it's sad, right? Like that's just the way that things are. Yeah, but we'll see. Yeah. I do enjoy watching movies in my comfy clothes on the couch with my blankie and my labradoodle. There's nothing like it.
I think that is another big part of it, of the movie experience on premiere nights is for me, or premiere weekends when it's kind of packed and it's something that people are excited about. That's really fun because you get this communal experience in a way you can't quite get otherwise. Mm-hmm. But like sometimes I'll see something like, okay, it's been out for 2 weeks and I can sneak away at a matinee because it's not a movie that Sarah, my wife, is super excited about. Yeah. And then I'm in the theater with 15 people and five of them are on their phones. And like, and then at that point there is a like, well, maybe I would rather watch it at home if this is going to be the theatrical experience. So I think that's a challenge. Final thought for me on it is just kind of selfishly, like, yeah, I can't wait for that big communal experience. I have so many happy memories of seeing Star Wars movies, you know, multiple times in a weekend, seeing them with both of you. Yeah. I want that big, all right, Star Wars is back. Selfishly, I want that. But at the same time, I kind of feel like we're going to get that if we wait longer.
Yeah.
The longer we wait from all of the up and down of, you know, people who were mad at Last Jedi, people who were mad at Rise of Skywalker, the Solo box office talk, the longer that we wait, at this point, it's going to be 5 years or more since Rise of Skywalker. I think it's in the long run good to let that excitement build up and good to get back to the idea that seeing Star Wars in a theater is a treat that does not come around every year. You got to wait for it. And I think it will be nice to get back to that excitement with some of the upsetness a little bit in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, I agree with
that. I agree with that. And it'll be interesting. Let's just say 2024, 5-6 years, we'll say, from Rise of Skywalker, right? Roundabout. What if you're in 2024, what if you're about 9 or 10 and your experience with Star Wars, you were too young for Rise of Skywalker, it's only been on TV, and you get to say, wait, they're going to put Star Wars in the movie theater? Wow. Wow. I can't believe they'll do that.
That's amazing. I get to see Grogu that big?
Wow. They put Star Wars in movies before Star Wars was a movie? Yeah. Oh my gosh. As my friend always says about Game of Thrones, they made a book about that show? Yes, indeed. So, awesome. Awesome thoughts. All of it are opinions. All of it for our point of views, perspectives, both in and around this town, as we say, but also just as fans. So take it all as you want. You probably out there have a lot of different thoughts as well. So there you go. We are going to take a quick break. More news on the way. But before we do, I will remember to let you know that we have Four Center Recommends an audiobook we think you should try on out on us, Justin.
Yeah, and we are still recommending Padawan by Kirsten White. It is a young Obi-Wan adventure. Again, I have read the first chapter. I can't wait to read the rest. Eventually, we'll discuss it in some format. So if you want to be all caught up with us, you can check out the audiobook.
Check it out, indeed. Check out that audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. I can say it in my sleep, which is sometimes why I dream through it and forget we have to do it. That was last week. This is this week. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got some casting news to catch up on this week in Star Wars history, all here on 4Center.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Force Center. This is our news show, taking a look at breaking news from a long time ago or breaking news for a show in the future. We wanted to catch up on the Acolyte castings from official sources. We try to wait till Star Wars confirms things or more of the trade, trade websites, I guess you'd say, have some more of the official news. So we will say this, no official announcements have been made in any of these castings, but they are solid. Deadline had the exclusive over the last couple of days that Manny Jacinto from The Good Place has joined the cast of The Acolyte. This followed trade reports of Lee Jung-jae and Jodie Turner-Smith joining the already officially confirmed Amandla Stenberg. These reports, they just kept pouring on out. It was great. It was kind of fun. There's some thoughts out there. But what about The Acolyte? Should we be concerned about The Acolyte? They're casting. They're shooting. They're having fun. There's no concern here. But what do you think about these reports, Joseph?
Yeah, I'm thrilled by these announcements. And yeah, I'm hungry for more Acolyte news. I know that was one thing that people talked about at D23, but I feel like the casting news is the news. You know, there isn't a teaser trailer because they don't have a cast yet. But I'm really, really thrilled by this casting news. This is just such interesting and diverse in every sense of the word group of people. I feel like it is a little bit taking a page from the Mandoverse tactic of hiring actors that you know from other places who have like one or two distinctive roles. That is the main thing that people think of, or they're kind of from other worlds, right? Like not literal space worlds, but like Bill Burr from, you know, the Comedy Store world. and a lot of the kind of fun stunt casting that has been happening in the Mandoverse, not all of it, but a lot of it is this fun, like, did you ever think you'd see this kind of grizzled middle-aged person in Star Wars? Here you go, from Werner Herzog to Bill Burr, go crazy, right? And the people who are being cast here are lots of different ages, but for our culture, they're fresh faces, right? They're exciting people who have only been on the scene for a couple years at most, right? Mm-hmm. And for me personally, I don't know Jodie Turner Smith's work, but Manny Jacinto, he's amazing on The Good Place. I love The Good Place, but he in particular, without any spoilers, he's well written, but his archetype is the not smart guy, just classic comedy. The one in the team who just misunderstands everything, not smart, right? At all.
Yeah.
And he took that archetype in their great writing, but from an actorly perspective, he made that kind of ancient comedy archetype entirely fresh, entirely unique, and really, really heartfelt. Like you really felt the trauma of being this guy who was not the sharpest of the team. So I'm really excited to see that. I also know he was in Top Gun Maverick. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. My wife told me there's open mouth kissing in it, so I haven't seen Top Gun Maverick.
Avoid. Avoid a little church sin.
I truly haven't seen Top Gun Maverick. But he's in that as well. And then Lee Jung-jae from Squid Game. I watched Squid Game, was really amazed by that. It's whole long story. But he is also amazing. And what is really intriguing to me about his performance in Squid Game is he plays many emotions in this terrible situation. You see him from absolute terror to absolute fury to absolute heartbreak. But then the amazing thing about it is he's still very funny. There's still this element, this very kind of old element of comedy is a person in trouble. And he's in this horrific situation. And it is horrific, but he makes many moments funny of just like, here's this kind of day-to-day guy stuck in this absurdly horrible situation. And he makes it real, but he makes it funny too. So both of these actors that I am aware of, being able to play a vast number of emotions with great heart, but also great sly comedy. Mm. And that is what has been in Leslie Headland's work before. Right. Makes me really excited for the possibility of a dark side show that deals with the dark side, but has an element of like wry, ironic humor.
Mm.
That's a great point too. Well, I'm not super familiar with Russian Doll other than seen some parts of it there. Loved that rom-com she put out with Sleeping With Other People. I actually really like that. Jason Statham is Alison Brie. So, you know, she could be writing something totally different, but some of the casting clues you're bringing to the table there, Joseph, are great about both what the show could be. And I'm not, you know, this is kind of how it works sometimes. You know, I spend all my time in the Star Wars world, maybe Game of Thrones world as well. And so a lot of these actors, this is how I will learn them. And I think that's the case for a lot of folks. And it's, I think that's a fun journey. Lee Jung-jae, I did not watch Squid Game. I was busy reading Star Wars. That's how I worked. I didn't watch The Good Place. I just watched Cheers again on Netflix. Like that's the way kind of my life is. So I get excited for me, that angle of, okay, who are these folks? Let me go discover them, because that's also how I discovered, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee. Like, that's kind of how it works. So, Jen, your thoughts on these reports?
It's funny because when this one came out with Manny Jacinto, I thought, oh, there's a lot of people they've announced. And I looked and I said, oh, it's actually only four. But for some reason, it felt like a lot more. Maybe there were some speculation things that I came across. I don't know. But I am not too familiar with these actors. I mean, I know Jodie Turner Smith. She is stunning. Her Instagram, oh my gosh. She she is just she wears these most gorgeous, like, outfits and dresses. But she's also a fantastic upcoming actor that people have been raving about. So I'm excited that she is a part of this. Lee Jung-jae, I saw Squid Game. I loved it. Mm. And I was shocked to learn that he's like a really cool star in Korea. Like he's totally different than his character that he played on Squid Game. In Squid Game, I was like, oh, he's maybe like this like character type actor. No, he's like a heartthrob movie star kind of guy in Korea. And so that's really exciting. And then Manny Jacinto, I don't know anything about The Good Place other than I've heard great things about it. And I know Russian Doll, which I loved, very dark, but very funny, but also very deep. So it's interesting to think about how all these players are going to come together and what Leslie Headland is creating. I'm so intrigued because there has not been too much. Like, we've gotten these casting announcements, but not that much more about the story, which I think is fine. You know, surprise us. Just let us know. But I'm sure that we'll start getting some leaks and whatnot of set photos and things like that. But this cast is really fresh and exciting and multicultural, and that is it's fantastic.
Yeah, I wanted to get some thoughts on The Acolyte this far out. I call this the temperature check. You know, we've been excited for Leslie Headland in Star Wars, and then now we're getting a little bit more with the cast. I think, again, both of you bringing great insights into the cast. But that's actually one place I think we have to kind of start is, you know, this Acolyte is very clearly doing something wonderful with the casting, and that's going to put it it's going to be in the target of some folks. And I just think that's going to have to be part of the, you know, be aware of that, be part of the discussion and brace for impact and stand up for this kind of casting and stand up for this kind of show, no matter what it's going to be about, just who's putting it together and who's going to be in it. I think we're excited by that, but there's going to be a lot of people who are going to use this as an opportunity to put a lot of other things out there. And I just see it with this cast news. I'm excited. I'm almost like ready for the fight, you know, like,
yeah,
it's great. You know?
Yeah, yes, more of shutting that down. Yeah, being aware of that, and hopefully they will follow up with the, you know, Lucasfilm with the way they handled Obi-Wan Kenobi and Reva, and just be ready to shut that down and just say no.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But it's there. But yeah, Joseph, your thoughts on just this far out, your temperature test on Acolyte.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it for a couple reasons. Without saying anything about the actual content of Andor, I'm really fascinated by it. I think that for the Disney Plus shows that we've had so far, we've had like The Bad Batch, which is really, you know, continuing the stylistic tradition of the Clone Wars, right? We've had the Mandoverse, which kind of set its own style in its own flavor. Then we had Obi-Wan Kenobi, which in some ways, you know, we've called like episode 3.5, right? It's a little bit of a part of the Skywalker saga. I think Andor is the first dish in the Star Wars buffet that belongs on the buffet, but tastes real different, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think we've been talking about this since the anthology films, right? Since the Star Wars stories, you know, go back to the beginning of the Force, and we're talking about when they're going to make a horror movie, you know, when they're going to make a, you know, Western train heist movie. Yeah, they threw that into Solo. You know what I mean? Are they going to make a Star Wars rom-com? And I think we're getting into that world with Andor. And I think Acolyte is going to be another big, this is a different flavor of story. It's set in a different time. I think it's going to have some horror elements. I think it's going to have some wry comedy elements. I think it's going to have some deep philosophy elements. So I'm really excited for it to just have a different flavor. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of any specifics we know about, we know that it deals with the dark side in some way. Mm-hmm. We know that Leslie Headland gave that great interview where she talked about really being inspired by sort of a globe-trotting adventures where you draw one map from the other, but this is galaxy trotting, galaxy hopping. And then we know it's called the Acolyte. So this is just total wild speculation on my part, but like if this is a group of people who are seeking the dark side, right?
Yeah.
Who want it because they think it will solve some problem for them, right? Like a bunch of people who are kind of on a similar journey of, say, Asajj Ventress, right? Mm-hmm. That's really interesting to me because it's a place where, you know, with a television show and with multiple characters, you could really drill down into what are the temptations of the dark side, you know, in a way that, you know, the great stories of Anakin and Ben Solo don't quite have room to because they're a part of this whole the tapestry. But if you're just talking about a group of people who are like, hey, maybe the dark side will fix all my problems, that might be really intriguing.
Oh, that's great stuff. First of all, you know, in terms of the genres, I think we all keep looking at the Acolyte as horror thriller. This looking at Leslie Headland's resume now, this could be the rom com. This could be the rom com. Yeah, it's the Acolyte. He's looking for love. I'm kidding. No, Jen, your thoughts there about what this could be.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm now, you know, Andor, and I won't say anything other than Andor is prepping people because we are stepping outside perhaps what we expect from Star Wars. And I think it's a wonderful thing. We, and I think the Acolyte is going to continue to do the same and kind of take us to new areas, not just maybe of the galaxy, but also story-wise, genre-wise. And I think people are ready for that. I am curious because we have these four actors that have been announced. Is this a core group? Are there going to be even more? And that actually is kind of thrilling because having seen Andor, and again, I won't say anything, I always wondered, how are they going to deal with having all these characters, right? How are we going to really get to know these characters when you have so many? It is, after watching Andor, I can say, yes. If anything, it actually enriches the story, in my opinion, getting to see all these different perspectives of how they are dealing with things in the galaxy, different communities. I love that. It feels very big. And I think that maybe the Acolyte might do something similar. I am curious to see who else are they going to announce, because they've kind of been trickling these out. Who's next?
Which one of these is Darth Plagueis? It's the only question I have.
That's what we need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great stuff, Jed. And Joseph, you got me thinking too of just, you know, what am I, when I hear the Acolyte or I hear what's been described, which has been obviously very little, 50 years out of Phantom Menace, dealing with dark side. I think I've had this kind of this from a distance view of dark temples, pondering, a lot of machinations, dark cloaks. It doesn't necessarily have to be that, especially some of the stuff where you're talking about that Leslie's cited, you know, some of her legend stuff, Globetrotter adventure. And the idea of, you know, characters searching for darkness because they feel they need it, or there's this great big thing, theme going on in Rings of Power, four episodes in of it. Yes, it's the story of light and dark, but often how it's hard to tell them apart and how often dark reflects the light. And so you can kind of, that's part of the choice you have to make. So any kind of those themes of dealing with the dark side during this time and how it can undercut or how it can pull you in, there's something powerful there that could be there. But again, speculation. But you got me excited to kind of thinking of that. Going around the galaxy looking for answers. And the answer is not the answer you need. That can be a good way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be utterly fascinating. And it might, you know, deal with something with, you know, somebody who believes the Sith are still out there and is looking, you know, for the Sith Master, you know, but it could also be there are other pockets across the galaxy who are going to dabble in the dark side, right? So it could be something entirely unrelated to whatever Sith is currently wearing the helmet, wearing the mantle, wearing the mask.
Yeah, indeed. I'm excited for it. Still am. Still excited for the Acolyte. And to what you're saying, Jen, too, of, yeah, there's the, you know, Ahsoka's going to be more, you know, that Filoni-verse, that type of continuous Rebels, a new classic Star Wars, because Ahsoka is very much a new classic character to me. You know, you can go to a place that the Lando show comes to light. You know, that's going to be a classic character. This has the ability to do something special and be its own thing. And you're both making great points. So I'm excited. Love the casting news. And we'll keep you updated, especially when everything gets 100% confirmed.
That's right.
All right. Before we wrap up today's episode, we're going to take a look at this week in Star Wars history. Looking ahead to Star Wars Past. This one's kind of simple and direct. Looking ahead, September 25th, 1951. Mark Hamill was born, making him the big 7-0. Mark obviously has been the center of the Star Wars universe since the beginning, but what does it mean to us to grow up with Luke and Mark as Luke? Jennifer?
Oh my gosh. The thing that has always struck me about Mark Hamill is that he has always embraced being Luke. He was able to transition to becoming a successful voice actor. But he's always seemed grateful and happy to be a part of Star Wars. And even when there was a time where that was not considered cool, right? Yeah. Like, he was always like, no, I am like Carrie used to always say, Carrie Fisher, I'm an ambassador, right? For Star Wars. Oh my gosh, I can't even describe what Luke Skywalker, I loved him. He was like my first crush, really. And I just, identified with him. And I think people don't realize how great of an actor he was in the original trilogy. Like, I think that he you know, kind of not got panned, because that's not true, but just people just thought, oh, he was just, you know, being himself or whatever. No, like he made Yoda Yoda. He acted with a puppet, and his performance is what made Yoda seem real. And it's just like, and then we saw his acting skills in The Last Jedi, and now the later part of his career where he's been taking on more challenging roles. Like, he is an actor, and an actor with chops. And I'm so happy that it's his birthday. We need to celebrate him every day.
Yes, indeed. No, wonderful stuff. And I echo what you're saying about, I don't know, I think it might've been something, you know, I was, obviously this was when I was a lot younger, but, you know, growing up, Return of the Jedi, he's a little more stoic. He's a little more reserved. He is trying to be a Jedi. He's a different version. And that can read as a little less, I don't know, dynamic or passionate than Han Solo running around shrugging and saving the galaxy, and Leia, you know, fighting and, you know, saying, I know, you know, I think I grew up with a different view of Mark Hamill's performer that I think I was very happy to rediscover his skills both in the present and in the past. You're right. Empire just slays it and does slay it in Jedi. I absolutely think so. Mm-hmm. I think just the way it was played, it can get looked at a little differently. And then just the you know, the unfortunate comparisons, you know, Harrison goes on, you know, already was going on and goes become an actual bona fide movie star. And Mark and even Carrie didn't become bona fide top of the line movie stars. They went and had wonderful careers in their own right, always did. So it was fun to see him kind of, you know, 2015, after carrying the flame of Star Wars for so long.
Yes.
Especially, you know, grumpy Harrison stepping away from some of those fandoms at times. I love seeing him not rewarded, because rewarded, I don't know, it's an interesting word, but, you know, just to see Mark Hamill back and see him get new opportunities where it just wasn't just a fun appearance in a Kevin Smith movie. Like, he was getting more opportunities and continuing to build on his excellent voiceover career. So it's been fun in this modern era. Joseph, you're a Luke guy. You're a Luke guy. What do you think about growing up with Luke and Marcus?
Oh, I feel so grateful to have grown up with Luke Skywalker, and in particular, Mark Hamill's performance. Yeah, I used to tell friends, you know, years and years ago before Force Center and podcasts, of like, I won't fight about nerd stuff. Like, if you tell me that Mark Hamill is a bad actor, I will bar fight you, not with fists, but with words. Like, that was like my line in the sand of like, he's phenomenal. Yes. Right. And I think what is so phenomenal about his performance in the original trilogy is that it is a complete evolution from a young, restless person who doesn't quite understand their journey that they're on, but wants it so much, wants to get out there and figure themselves out. And then has a chapter of just screwing everything up right and left, then finds themselves, right? It's this kind of perfect arc to grow up with. And he plays Luke with very distinct characteristics. You can point to this example of here's an intrinsic thing to Luke Skywalker. This is how it relates to his sister. This is how it relates to his father. This is the choice that Luke made. But it's also universal enough that you can so project yourself onto Luke's journey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when you ask people who Luke is in the original trilogy, you get stories about their life, right? About the person's life, because that's what this performance created, is this room to so relate to this character as he goes on this really recognizable journey from, you know, youthful enthusiasm and kindness, the I care, you know, to the bitter failings of Empire, to the understanding of Jedi. He plays that all so well. And then for me, when I got older and realized, oh, and Mark Hamill is also a giant nerd. It's like, I was right to relate to him, right? To find out that he's a guy. I was like, oh yeah, I was thrilled to go to San Diego Comic-Con to advertise Star Wars before anybody really cared about San Diego Comic-Con, right? Mm-hmm. I like comic books and monster movies. Like, it's so great.
Yeah, I love it. Love hearing you talk about it. And carrying that flame. But the follow-up here, as we celebrate Mark's 70th birthday, is that what do we think it's like to grow up with older Luke? because this is the perspective a lot of folks have. This is the old guy with the beard. And then Mark Hamill being outspoken, whether it be social issues, political issues, or just outspoken, you know, better for better or worse about what he feels about the character or what he had to do as a performer to deliver what Ryan wanted. There's a lot of Mark Hamill out there for a younger generation. Joseph, any thoughts on what it's like to grow up with old man Luke on the island?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's great to grow up with Mark Hamill is such a presence of kindness, right? Who just always at the end of the day emphasizes how can Star Wars reach out to people? How can I reach out to people? And even on, you know, this in this weird era of social media when he faves something that he doesn't realize was, you know, problematic, he addresses it. You know, like he is a good guy, you know. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's beautiful to see. And then his performance in The Last Jedi in particular, also in the final seconds of Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker. It's such a gift, right? It's a gift I never thought that I would get as somebody my age. To have gone on that youthful journey with Luke to now when I'm middle-aged and kind of needing to relearn some of the things I learned when I was young, to have Luke there to guide me through that again. Mm. And I feel every time the Oscars comes up, I'm like, somebody should come out and say, we've made an error. Here are the five Oscars we should have given Mark Hamill for The Last Jedi. Mm. So I feel really strongly about it. And then there is this sort of comedy perspective. I know our friend Alden at dinner was talking about talking to younger people who didn't have a relationship with Luke and thought of him as that guy who was kind of mean to Rey, which cracks me up because I know what he means to me. And then I also understand like that the Luke Skywalker action figure from The Last Jedi is one of my absolute favorite figures. I also understand why children didn't run out in droves to buy Luke Skywalker. Like, now, hey, kids, do you want to take the emotional trauma and existential dread home today? Now you can. You know, like there's like a sense of humor about it. Mm-hmm. It's a different perspective. It's a different time. But yeah. For me, it was perfect.
It's always a reminder when you sat down in that theater in 2015, a lot of different eyes from a lot of different generations. Some seen it all for the first time. Jen, you probably have a little more experience with this than Joseph and I do with some young Padawans in your house. They might look at Luke a little differently.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I can't imagine he must seem like a grumpy, reluctant old man, you know. But I will say we have the Lego Octo set with old man Luke, and the minifigure has been played with. The girls will sometimes bring them out sometimes when they want to. But I think that actually Mark Hamill himself, what I think has been great is that in these later years, thanks to social media, he's very accessible. He's very connected with the fans and chatty, and he speaks his mind. And he's actually, that is how younger people are. They're very like open and authentic and honest with sharing every thought that they have. And he is the same way. So he fits right in. And I love that he is so accessible to not just fans, but to anybody, you know. And he will absolutely comment back on Twitter, which is, he's a megastar, and yet he still takes time to do that and to share parts of his personal life, which I love as well. So
yeah,
he still continues to be a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah, and that represents a lot of Luke, right? He's he understands he's a symbol. He's a symbol in a lot of ways, and he takes that seriously. But he's also true to himself. And what I hope too, I can't speak for any younger generation, especially a youngster, 7, 8, 9, and interacting with old grumpy man Luke. I can only hope that it represents this thing that's you know, Joseph and I and Jennifer always talk about the generational. Change that's big at Star Wars. But I like this idea too of this, what I keep looking at, generational exchange, in which you got this old Jedi that Rey needs something from, but she makes changes in him while also learning valuable lessons from him as well, particularly stuff in the Rise of Skywalker. I really like that idea of you are not throwing the past away. You're learning from it, but the past has to be ready to grow and let the next generation lead. And I see a lot of that in Mark Hamill out there online. He's very involved. He might make you're right, Joseph, occasionally you know, there's been some stuff liking something, maybe not fully vetting, but he's just out there. He's present, and he does not seem 70, and that's that number means a lot not more different things than it does back in the past, but he's very much, he is old man Luke in all the good ways, I think, out there. So yeah, happy birthday, Mark Hamill. Mm-hmm. Big 70. Anyways, any final thoughts, Joseph, on that, or Jennifer?
No, I thank him for continuing to inspire people, both as himself and as Luke Skywalker. I think about his Rise of Skywalker quote, "Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi." Luke Skywalker's wise words help me every day.
Mm. There you go. There you go. It never leaves us. All right. That is it. That's our look at this week in Star Wars history, our look at Star Wars news. Let's get on out of here. We are the Force Center podcast feed. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod, on Instagram, YouTube as well. Live Q&A coming up here at the end of the month. So subscribe over on the YouTube channel. And when you subscribe, hit that notification bell and, you know, you'll learn when we're going live. But we'll let you know, too. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search or find us. We're merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at CatNapsock. Go to my website, CatNapsock.com. I have information finally can confirm in New York City on October 6th and 7th at the New York Comedy Club in the East Village with Mark Ellis and some other special guests. Ticket information on the website there. Looking forward to getting on out to the East Coast there. I've been forgetting to highlight charity organizations. Joseph's been doing a great job reminding me to do it. I do want to highlight as we often do, the Trevor Project, which is a great nonprofit organization that focuses on suicide prevention efforts among the queer community. Please consider donating by going to the trevorproject.org. Jennifer.
Yes, that is a great, great organization. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. Who am I? I didn't write it down. See, look at what happens when I don't write it down. I'm just off the cuff today. Things are just flying off the cuff. I'm going to be having Andor content coming soon. I cannot wait to dive into the series. And also that Disney Plus YouTube segment about our Andor premiere will be also out this week. And I will be sure to share that on my social media channels.
Love that. Love that. Joseph, take us home.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. Still sharing a lot of my Star Wars action figures as they find new homes in my home. You can also go to my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I had put a call out the last couple episodes of Force Center to get some help with my YouTube channel. I want to get it back to a monetization place because I got some fun plans for that, and many Force Center listeners have been subscribing. Thank you so much for doing that. If you are on YouTube, it would be great if you would be willing to subscribe and maybe watch some old comedy videos, some old audio episodes of Obsessed that are on YouTube. That would help me out tremendously. Thank you for everyone for helping so far. It has made me feel really, really lucky. So thank you very much for that. The thing that I would like to highlight is I want to continue to highlight Vote Forward, particularly as we get very, very close to the midterms with really a lot on the line. Vote Forward is an organization where you can write letters to voters. You can pick the state. You can sometimes pick the county and encourage people to use their power and vote by writing them a very short letter about personally why you vote. Vote Forward has done research and they have the statistics to back up that this actually does increase voter turnout. So it is making a real difference. If you're interested in looking at it more, their website is votefwd.org.
Great stuff as always. Important time indeed. All right, that is it for this week. Our look at Star Wars news is complete. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.